You're with Brian McClain and Timothy Shea and State of the Nation on today's News Talk TNT.
I'm Brian McClain, broadcasting live out of Central Texas for today's News Talk, and this is State of the Nation, Hour 2 for May the 2nd. I'm here with Timothy Shea. Timothy, welcome back. Here we are, Hour 2. Let's do this.
Welcome, welcome. It's, 2 hours, we're still trying to shoehorn things in there, Ash.
Yeah, I know. I have a minor cultural complaint. Actually, it's a massive cultural complaint. As a representative of Generation X, I would just simply like to point out that we were fed a whole bunch of lies growing up, fundamental lies. And I'm not trying to blame the boomer generation. In fact, I think that the boomer generation probably experienced the same lies and got to have the benefits times in which they were able to thrive, times in which they were able to get a GI Bill, if they're a veteran, get a house, get a car, get a picket fence, get a job, have a retirement, and be able to draw Social Security from it. Gen X, we were told these things from our parents, who were those people, and we saw it working for them, many of us. Not all of us, but many of us did. We knew it was there. We knew the American dream was there. We were told we could be anything. We were told we could be astronauts. We were told we could be presidents. But as time went on for us Gen Xers, we saw astronauts blow up in the sky, wheeled in on TVs for us to see, for me in fifth grade. What a horror. One of my first media horrors, I would say. The Challenger explosion. And then we discover that, no, you probably can't be a president. This is an elite group of people that you're not going to get into. Some might argue that Obama was sort of that, but if you know your stuff, you know that that's a poor argument to make. So here we are, as Timothy stated earlier in the program, really no credence put in the fact that you're going to get Social Security that's going to put you, in a state of comfort, as you get older. And I think a lot of people are feeling that way. And I'm really sorry to say to the millennial generation and to the Zoomers now, sorry, gang, you didn't even get the benefit of the lie to work towards something. You're just handed this big bucket of chaos, this big mess, this giant propaganda wave, out of control government, out of control spending, out of control wars, out of control culture. Heck, we were headed in a good direction. At least that's what they told us when I was a kid, Timothy.
Yeah, a big bucket of suck, right? See, I can play both sides of the fence. I'm either a very junior boomer or a very senior Xer, depending on how you slice it. They say that the boom ended in 64. Well, I was born in 62, but culturally, I'm more of an Xer. I was a freshman in college when the Challenger blew up. I was in fifth grade in the 70s. And in fact, I was in the fifth grade in 1973 when the oil crisis was occurring with OPEC and whatnot. And that got my brain tickled. I used to read both our morning and evening newspapers as a kid. I was a little Alex P. Keaton. And that dug me into looking at the Middle East and looking at geopolitics and following the war. And a cousin of mine was married to a guy who was a researcher for President Nixon after his retirement from the Oval Office. So I've been digging into these things for a long time. And you're absolutely correct, Brian. And it was, in the 70s when I figured out, I was about 15 years old when I figured out, yeah, there's not going to be Social Security. And sure, maybe I'll get a few shekels in 8 years when I'm 70, if they haven't raised the age for the maximum payout to 75 by that point. But you're 100% correct. We were sold a bill of goods. And you know who I really blame? I blame Schoolhouse Rock. Because they taught us that it was just a bill and it was easy and that's how laws get made. It's not quite that simple.
No, and what it actually is something that does not rock. But you know what does rock? Good documentaries. You'll love our special screenings, Uninterrupted Cinema, right here, features some of the latest notable documentaries from the world's best filmmakers. So check out TNT's website for more information. Weekends are better when you spend it with us at Today's News Talk, TNT.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Congressman Randy Weber is the U.S. representative for the 14th Congressional District of Texas, serving since 2013. He serves on the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, as well as Science, Space, and Technology. Congressman Weber, thank you for joining us today. Timothy and I would like to get your take on the Biden administration's, pause to LNG export permits. Can you break down what this decision is and what it means, particularly to the existing and under construction LNG plants on the Gulf Coast of Texas?
I can, guys. Thanks for having me on, Ken. I've had to travel in my car. We were on a plane stuck on the tarmac for almost an hour and a half. Can y'all hear me okay?
We got you.
Good. Listen. Our Gulf Coast of Texas, District 14, is the upper third of the Gulf Coast. Starts at Louisiana border and goes all the way down to Matagorda County. Seven ports, two LNG plants already currently in production, and we've got Port Arthur LNG, which is on the boards, and it's already been through phase one. Now they're waiting on phase two when all of a sudden this president decides to put a pause on this. And let me just tell you, Brian and Timothy, our District 14 produces 65% of the nation's jet fuel, 80% of the nation's military-grade fuel. We export out of the country more LNG than any other port in the country. So we are huge on the LNG and exports. When the president puts a pause on it, y'all know this, and I know your listeners know this, we appreciate what y'all do. It makes for a lot of uncertainty with the investors that are behind those plants. You're talking about LNG plants that can cost, choose a number, $2, $3, $4, $6, $8 billion with the B dollars. We want them up and running. We want to be selling LNG to the European, to Europe. We want to be selling to Japan, really all over. And yet this president, when the world is on fire, has decided to put a pause on permits. It's unconscionable and makes no sense, except that he's pandering to his lefties.
Well, and I always try to make sense of things, right, Congressman? I have to figure out why things are happening. And the only thing that makes sense is that the people that are running this president, because clearly he's not in charge of this administration, are against America. What's the first thing they did? They sold off our strategic oil petroleum reserve that President Trump had built back up. And now he's trying to refill it slowly a little bit when oil prices are higher. But there's been a war on hydrocarbons from day one. And, you know, it's maddening because these are the same people that used to talk about clean coal. And then coal was no good. And they went to clean natural gas. And now we're being told that natural gas is bad. You can't even have a gas stove in a new house here in New York State. And this war on hydrocarbons is really an assault on America, our quality of life, and our economy.
Well, you're saying exactly the same thing that I've been saying. It's as if they want this country to be subservient to other countries. And I will tell you this, that energy, when we have energy dominance and energy independence, then we also have safety and security for our country. I didn't say this earlier, but 60% of the strategic petroleum reserves are in District 14, actually 59.something%. And it's craziness. Well, actually, I guess if you're the president and you're wanting to get reelected, you know, they started selling it off so they could lower the price of a gallon of gasoline here, I don't know, a year or two back. Next thing you know, the president's going to be giving away free college tuition. Oh, wait, he's doing that too. And I had that conversation with Jennifer Granholm yesterday in the Energy and Commerce Committee about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And I'm thinking that it's pretty much common sense. The reason they call it Strategic Reserve is, I don't know, for a strategic reason. The world's on fire. We'd have enough oil reserves so that, yes, we can make sure that our great military has what it needs, that Americans have what they need, and not just be sold off to actually work for the president's benefit in the election cycle. And that's exactly what they're doing. They want us to be depending on other countries. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, we Timothy and I watched you speaking with Jennifer Granholm. There was some video of it that we saw. And, you know, I think one of the things that I found most noteworthy, number one, was the term strategic event. I thought that was, you know, that really stood out to me with regards to strategic petroleum reserves, what that actually means. And I found it noteworthy that she basically said, well, I'm paraphrasing a little, but she was talking about it being a savings to the taxpayers that they didn't pay because they didn't like the price or something like that. And I just couldn't help but think, is she joking? I mean, our government just spent almost $100 billion on foreign conflicts, which arguably make a strategic event even more likely.
Well, absolutely it does, and you're absolutely right. I thought that was, what a good spin she put on that when she said this is about for the consumers. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You guys have been against fossil fuel, and y'all know this. When Biden was running for president, in fact, I call him President O'Biden because I think he's Obama's third term. But when he was running for president, there's a video on YouTube of him in New Hampshire on campaign telling, I don't know, little girl, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years old maybe, that he intended to kill the fossil fuel industry. And he set about to make that promise good. That strategic petroleum reserve should be there for the country in dire times and needs of strategery, if you will, not because he wants to lower the price of gasoline. You can't help but thinking he wants to be subservient to Saudis, to Qatar, and even, you know, Russia produces a lot of oil. And Venezuela, and why shouldn't we be doing that right here in Texas? We were saying back then, Mr. President, when he went over to the Saudis and begged them to produce more oil, we wanted to say to Mr. President, why don't you come to Texas and ask us to produce more oil? Keystone Pipeline would have come into my district over by Port Arthur, 830,000 barrels of oil a day, which is equivalent, by the way, to 5,300 18-wheeler tankers on the highways a day at a time to hit 830,000 barrels. This administration is, in my opinion, pandering to the left, wants this to be a socialistic country, and they're out of control.
Yeah, because they can't even fall back on saying it's the environment and wanting to push us into electric vehicles. I think it's actually more nefarious than that, because people that have bought the EVs are now realizing, oh, wait a second, I can't resell them because the battery warranty expires. Nobody wants to buy these things used because the batteries cost $36,000 to replace and they're only good for a few years. It's just a boondoggle to move people, just like Hash for Clunkers was designed to get those cars that didn't have the controllable chip in them. I think the move to EVs is designed to get rid of the internal combustion engine and the diesel engine. And then once everybody's using EVs, oh, you know what? This isn't a good solution either. And people's mobility are going to be severely restricted, and they'll have done it without passing a single law.
Well, you know, that's exactly the point. And I saw a survey, I don't know if y'all saw a survey last week, that said 90% of all electric vehicles are still on the highways today. The other 10% made it home safely. So that's a joke, guys.
That's it. Yep.
But you go back to Obama's cash for clunkers. You know, one of the benefits of that was at least you got a bunch of Obama stickers. There's a bunch of Obama stickers on the bumpers. At least you got a bunch of Obama stickers off the highways.
Yeah. Talk about silver linings. I see you're good at looking for those too. You can follow Congressman Weber at TXRandy14 on X.com. I just want to get that in there so that people can follow you, because you post videos of these things like we're talking about here on your account. So I really want to make sure that people get out there and follow you. And what's at stake? What do you think is really at stake if our strategic petroleum reserves are left, unfilled, especially in these times?
Well, it's It's energy security. It's, as I said earlier, it's national security. When we have energy, we move things. We make things. I tell people all the time, guys, the things that make America great are the things that make that America makes. How do we do that? With a dependable, reliable, and yes, affordable fuel supply. And when the president has been in the inflation business, drawing down the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, now, as you already pointed out, rightfully so, and thank you for doing that, trying to make us adhere to their requirements for gas appliances, they want to have the government in control running every single aspect of our life, daily life. And they say stupid things like, well, you know, this gas stove is actually going to be more efficient. It's going to save, choose a number, you know, $150 worth of natural gas a year. And they say, Republicans aren't telling, you know, citizens that. Well, what they're not telling citizens is, yeah, you got to buy a new gas stove for $1,000 or $1,200 when people are struggling to put groceries on the table, struggling to put gas in their tank. And yet all these I call this the new world, the new religions, save Mother Earth. They're struggling to make sure that we are all under their banner of saving Mother Earth by controlling our energy security. I mean, that's as plain as I can state it.
Yeah, we agree. We see it. Much of America sees it, and their grift is falling flatter and flatter by the day, and largely thanks to work by good people like you. So we want to thank you for everything you're doing, and thank you for taking the time while you're traveling to join us here at State of the Nation. Again, at TXRandy14 on X.com. Congressman Randy Weber, anything else you want to throw out there before we have to let you go?
Yeah, I want to say kudos to y'all for passing that word and getting this word, continue to get this word out, because if the American, and I think the American public is waking up, and I think Biden is on his way out. At least I pray to God that he is. So I appreciate what you guys are doing. Get that word out. Keep making people aware and keep on keeping on. We appreciate y'all.
Amen. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. That means a lot to us, and as does the work that you're doing. And we'll look forward to having you back on again right here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
One must be optimistic when you see the Prime Minister of Australia telling us that a video showing that a bishop being stabbed is misinformation, and that the E-Safety Commissioner, who used to work for Twitter, now going after the new named X, and was a former, well, on the board of the World Economic Forum, say no more. That's the world that we live in at the moment, but everyone can see it. You can't be more exposed. The Emperor, or the E-Safety Commissioner, has no clothes, if you will. It's all coming to the fore, and we will continue to work on this with many, many different ways and processes as we give you the news of the day.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk. TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
The human mind is like a computer. No matter how efficient it may be, its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
Troy Miller joins us now to talk about the efforts to censor the truth. Troy is the president and CEO of National Religious Broadcasters. And we're going to start the discussion to talk about the war on AM radio. Welcome back to State of the Nation, Troy. Why do they have their sights set particularly on AM? I think I know, but why don't you tell us?
Well, yeah, I think you guys do know. Well, if you look at AM radio, you know, AM radio has been a staple in this country for well over 100 years. And I grew up in rural America, and a lot of us in rural America rely on AM radio for the information we get, and particularly for emergency information in times of natural disasters. So the car companies looked at AM radio and said, yeah, maybe it's time that that goes. The first claimed it was really due to an interference problem with the new electric vehicles and the electric vehicle mandate. Of course, the government accounting office happily went in and did an audit and said, no, that's not really the case. A $40 part is insignificant to a $25,000 plus car. So we sort of peel back the onion here. And the real issue is about who's going to control the information in the car. The car companies are looking at what's called the connected car. This is where your car uses cellular service to connect to the internet. They want to control the screen and the dash, and they want you to subscribe to the information that they deem is usable or feasible in the car. So this is really about, when you get down to the core, taking away the option of free radio, of free access to information, and replacing it with subscription-based access that they can control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Troy, you know, what do you say to the, I don't know, maybe the hula hoop using and Zima drinking person out there who says, you know, hey, you guys are just being Luddites. Why don't you just enjoy the technology? Use your Wi-Fi, your Bluetooth, your podcast, your iPods, your this and that. Play your YouTube. A lot of people would be saying that, but this is actually really important.
It is really important because YouTube doesn't have localized information on it, doesn't share localized advertising, doesn't tell you what specifically is going on in your community. So this is about maintaining access to free information about what's going on in your community as well as around the country. Plus, look, the top genres, the top programming on AM radio are talk and conservative talk, Christian talk and teach, Christian music, and Spanish language radio. So it's not about just innovation or stifling information. It's about the access. What we're saying is the choice for the user, for the person in the car, needs to remain there. Somebody back in corporate America doesn't need to make that choice. They need to allow the person who owns the car to make that choice.
And, you know, really, it's highlighting and underscoring an issue that I think is even more important, and that is safety, right? These new vehicles with that unipanel dash are very sleek, very futuristic looking. You've got all your digital indicators, your tachometer, your speedometer, everything else, and it's all tied electronically. Everything is your drive-by-wire now. You don't have your odometer running in a wire to your wheels, and you don't have your speedometer running via wire. It's all electronic connections. What happens when the thing glitches and you're going no more than 65 miles an hour on the highway, of course? But seriously, what if you're traveling at highway speeds or you're going down a back road out in the middle of Kansas and all of a sudden your panel dies and all of a sudden you no longer have control of that vehicle, and those ditches are pretty big out in the fields, and it might be a long time before somebody finds out even that you're missing.
Yeah, so those issues exist. Just take that now and extend it over to AM radio. So what happens when the thunderstorm comes through and all the cell towers are down and you can't get any information? Look, I grew up at the top of Tornado Alley. This happens all the time. Plus, we live down in Florida when hurricanes come through. Cellular data is not that reliable. You're going to lose it. They lose power. There's no backup. You want to be able to turn that radio on and find out that tornado is coming down your road. You need to get off. You need to get over and get in the ditch. Or as you said, you know, what happens when it all goes out and everything's missing? It's all gone. Yeah, it's very frightening to think about the possibilities of this controlled dash and what's going to happen.
Yeah, and exactly. And let's talk about AM stations, local AM stations, you know, depending on where you live, you know, I feel like AM stations are somewhat of a good representation of, you know, a particular locale and the culture there in the locale. So, you know, albeit probably a little more normy and liberal, like if we looked at the whole statistical layout of all the AM radio stations, but they aren't getting yellow cards from corporate producers. They probably aren't getting calls from people at the DOD or I don't know, you know, who knows, Atlantic Council, all these, you know, creatures, these government tentacles trying to reach into mainstream and internet media. I mean, how important is that? I mean, that just in and of itself is regulated in a very different way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, look, the emergency alert system primarily operates on AM radio as the backbone. If you buy one of these weather alert radios, there's a good chance that's an AM frequency that you're picking up. And the reason is the AM frequency is better suited to power through the storms and things that happens during these natural disasters. Look, I grew up, I said, Nebraska, we would get AM radio out of Texas, you know, on a good clear day. And so the distance and the ability for AM radio to reach in these kinds of situations. Plus, let me talk about that localization really quick for a minute. Because
let's do that right after. Troy, we got an incoming headline. So let's pick it up right there after these headlines from today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, TNT Radio News.
I have huge news.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah. Do it.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. U.S. Representative Virginia Fox, supported by House Speaker Mike Johnson, announced that the Committee on Education and the Workforce, which she chairs, is investigating the response of university leaders to recent campus disruptions linked to the Israel-Hamas conflict. At the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, two student members of the Pi Kappa Phi fraternity intervened when pro-Palestine protesters replaced the U.S. flag with a Palestinian flag.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction.
Misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Troy, you wanted to talk about the localization issue.
Yeah, because, you know, beyond the radio, these local radio stations, they're connected to their communities. They're reporting on what's going on, community calendars, and they're an avenue for local broadcasters. You don't see that, and you're not going to get that when you get it behind the scenes on these internet driven apps and other things go on. Once you lose that over the air and they lose that audience, it's going to be hard for those local advertisers and hard for communities to really hone in on what's going on. How many apps are you going to have to click on to get that kind of information?
Well, not only that, but you're exactly correct. In order to maintain their FCC license, they have to provide a certain percentage of news broadcasting, public service announcements, et cetera. And the government, back when the government did things that actually were beneficial for the people, often accidentally, but they were still beneficial. That was one of the quid pro quos. You can have this monopoly on this frequency bandwidth range, but you're going to have to put out some news, local news. You're going to have to run PSAs. And if that all goes digital over the net, that's not an FCC license anymore. And those requirements go bye-bye.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've already seen that on the television side where the FCC has been unwilling to take the regulations over from the television to the streaming services. So radio won't be any different on that side. So we're really excited that the Senate and the House in a bipartisan effort has come behind two bills that are there moving through to save AM radio or to protect AM radio. The Senate bill just passed 60 co-sponsors. That makes that bill filibuster proof on the Senate side. And the House held a hearing just this week on Tuesday. And it looks like that bill is going to come out of committee, and it has a lot of bipartisan support. We think it'll very quickly get 218 supporters. That's the number needed to advance it to the floor and know that it's going to pass without any opposition.
One would think this is a slam dunk, seeing as it affects our emergency broadcast system. I mean, and that kind of begs the question, who, like, if this were to go the direction that those that are pushing for it to go, who does that benefit? I mean, who is it? It's obviously not the American people. Who's the main beneficiary of taking AM out of vehicles?
Well, I think there's several beneficiaries. First, the car companies, they're going to benefit because they want to control the access to that connected car. This is another revenue stream for them. They're going to decide who gets to subscribe and be part of that. You know, just like Apple does today, the car manufacturers decide who gets to be in that app store in the car. So you have that benefit on that side. They want this new revenue. The other folks that really are pushing for this are the progressive groups that would love to take conservative talk radio and Christian talk and teach radio off the air. They want as much of that off of the air as they can. And I'll tell you the third group I think is going to benefit, and that's the government, because what we know with the collusion between the government and the big tech companies, they can now track what you listen to. Free over-the-air AM, they can't track the station you're tuning into. They can't track that you're tuning into this show or any other conservative talk show. But once it goes in the dash, they're going to start tracking, and you're going to end up, like I probably already am, on a list, on a watch list somewhere as a potential threat to the U.S. government because you listen to the wrong kinds of information and shows. And now this will give them the ability to do that.
Everything always comes down to that issue, doesn't it? Control.
Yeah, absolutely. Down to control.
Yeah. You know, it's also Military Appreciation Month, and we know that you're a proud U.S. Navy veteran, and NRB stands by America's servicemen and women. Do you have anything you want to say in light of it being Military Appreciation Month?
Yeah, thank you guys for bringing that up. This is a great time for people to remember those who have served in the military or are serving now in the military, people who are putting it all on the line for the protection of their country and way of life here. So I can't say enough about my military service. The people I served with were top notch. They were the best people. The time there, you feel like family. But a lot of veterans today, as they roll out of the service, they're not finding that connection. The veteran suicide rate and depression rates are among all-time highs. So we really are proud to stand behind this cause. And churches across this country, every year churches recognize veterans during Veterans Day, Memorial Weekend, Armed Forces Day, and churches are really coming along and bringing programs in to reach out to veterans. So we just keep encouraging people to do that and encourage the community to reach out to your veterans this month and thank them for their service. And those who are in the service, you know, think about writing letters and thanking them as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely encourage that. And we want to thank you for your efforts. We know NRB is really big on this. And, you know, you work with people experiencing PTSD and various other struggles. So it's a great month to talk about that. And also, I believe that today is National Day of Prayer. I think you might also be the right man to ask about that. Anything you want to say on today's National Day of Prayer?
Absolutely. You know, I was able to participate in the National Day of Prayer event this morning in the Capitol building, back in the Capitol for the first time since COVID. A group of us Christian leaders and leaders across the community, as well as leaders from Congress and different areas, spent about 90 minutes this morning in the Capitol praying for this country, praying for various areas of this country, including myself, who got to pray for people who work in the media, entertainment, and the arts. And so our country certainly is in desperate need of prayer, and people are in desperate need of hope. So we would encourage people today to continue to pray for America, pray for its leaders, pray for the church and for families, and the various things. It's just an honor and a privilege to be able to pray for our country in the Capitol.
It absolutely is. And sometimes it's not the easiest things, but we even have to pray for our president. And I have to pray for my Pope, even though I'm not. That's maybe even more difficult than praying for Joe Biden some days. But you're absolutely correct. It is important. We're in a spiritual battle. We're just seeing it play out here in the physical realm. We've got about a minute left. Any last words, Troy?
Well, yeah, the good point there. And that's true. We're in a spiritual battle. And we have to remember, look, as Christians, the scriptures call us to pray for our enemies. And it calls us to pray for our rulers unconditionally. And we do that. We did that today. So just a lot going on in their country. People need hope. So I hope today is a day that will bring a lot of people that kind of hope, that will settle a lot of issues, a lot of divisiveness in the country today.
From your lips to God's ears, Troy Miller, National Religious Broadcasters, thanks. We can't wait to have you back on State of the Nation right here on today's News Talk, TNT.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
You are loved. You are valued. You are resilient. You got this.
You are there for them. We are here for you. Find free care guides at AARP.org/caregiver.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
Our next guest has a new book out. It is called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. It's available at Amazon and good booksellers everywhere now, so go ahead and just open a tab and punch that in, because you're going to want to get it. And he says, quote, when it comes to election integrity, there is perhaps no greater endeavor that is more fundamental for the preservation of our republic. If the voice of the people is heard and their resolve enacted, both in policy and representation, there is hope for a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. We're joined now by former Congressman Jody Heiss, who served as Georgia's 10th congressional, served in Georgia's 10th congressional district for 8 years. And in 2020, he was one of the first members of Congress to call for a full investigation into the systemic issues plaguing our country's electoral process, and quickly became a nationally recognized voice for the election integrity movement. Former Congressman Heiss, welcome to State of the Nation. Thank you for joining us today. We're excited about the book. Obviously, we know what got you to write the book, but tell us how that all came about and where we're at today, because it just came out last month, right?
Yeah, it's just been out a few weeks. But yeah, listen, I didn't go to Congress. By the way, it's an honor to be with you all. Thank you so much for having me. But I didn't go to Congress with election integrity on my radar. Okay, that was not the first thing. But I ended up being one of the senior members on the House Oversight Committee. And when COVID hit, you may remember we had our very first case in the United States in Washington State. So that case took place the very next week. We started having hearings in Oversight Committee led by the Democrats on the need to more or less federalize and take over our election processes across the country. And COVID became the excuse that people are not going to be able to go to the ballot box. There may be lockdowns or whatever the case may be. But they started an entire series 1 week after another, after another, after another, while the rest of us were wondering what is COVID going to mean to us and our families and so forth. The Democrats were pushing for election reform in the midst of it all. And then they added a second layer to it, which was that voter suppression was an epidemic across the country. And they put up Georgia as Exhibit A in that argument. And of course, being from Georgia, I strongly disagreed with them. So I started pushing back on that, and then pushing back on the whole COVID excuse, springboard, if you will, to change our election laws. And that's how I got involved in this. And, you know, it's amazing to me. I still am stunned with the rapid spread of the change of election laws. And by and large, it all bypassed the various legislatures of the states. These decisions were made unilaterally, oftentimes by secretaries of state or someone of that nature, who using COVID emergency powers as the reason they just changed the election laws. And it was an absolute disaster in terms of integrity of our election processes.
There's no question about that. And the good people of Georgia see fit to bring people such as yourself, like your former colleague Doug Collins, to Washington to represent them. And yet, in Atlanta, you've got a governor and a secretary of state who are nominally Republicans, who did everything they could to avoid a Republican victory in Texas or in Georgia, the way it looks. That frustrates people. And the other thing that frustrates people is Republicans in Washington, you know, making a big deal out of holding a hearing or issuing a subpoena or a sternly worded letter or even a criminal referral that are all dead letter issues. It's a dog and pony show. Everybody knows it is. People are getting fed up with the Republicans continuing to only appear to fight and not actually fight. Is there a remedy for this?
You know, one of the big differences that I noticed in my time in Congress between the two parties was, and I'm convinced of this, that Nancy Pelosi woke up every single day trying to figure out what could she do to move her agenda forward. Republicans, on the other hand, seem to get up every day and think, how can we win the next election? And listen, I'll tell you, the one who moves the agenda wins. It's not, as you referenced, we can win elections, but if people don't get up there and push for our agenda and push a conservative agenda forward, then what is the point? It's the one who moves the agenda who wins. And yeah, there's a lot of frustration, and rightfully so. Now, with that, I will say there are quite a number of people in Washington, specifically, I'm thinking of the Freedom Caucus, which I'm an original member of, one of the founding members. Man, they're in the trenches. They're pushing. And there are some others beside that. So I don't want to throw a blanket over everyone in the Republican Party. But yeah, it is a great source of frustration for many people who feel as though they've lost their voice in Washington. And I know, you know, the Freedom Caucus, we used to refer to ourselves as the Republican wing of the Republican Party, because we actually did what the platform says that we all believe in. And so, but yeah, there's frustration, and you're exactly right with that.
Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to the elections, right, like we've done a lot of broadcasting and interviewing and talking to people about just, you know, what they saw, what went wrong in specific locations, and kind of the tapestry that we're seeing here is like a circle of corruption that includes district attorneys, activist lawyers, activist judges, county clerks, as you mentioned, secretary of state position, new legislations that are creating these vulnerabilities, you know, that we're seeing, polling center officials, and then there's all the cybersecurity stuff. So it's a huge thing to unpack, but like that circle of positions when they're politically entrenched, is that the worst part? What do you think is the most odious, like worst politically weaponized piece of the mechanics?
Well, listen, you put your finger on a huge piece of it, but there are multiple pieces. There are multiple issues. And I deal with this in the book from our judiciary, who are using their power to, in many regards, in many ways, tip the scales as it relates to voting outcomes and so forth, the processes. But you have elected officials doing the same. And there's a host of issues there. We have grossly inaccurate voter registration files. In fact, I just read an article, I think the week before last, that said the average state is somewhere between 8 and 18% inaccurate. So if you just round that off, if we're between 10 and 20% wrong before we ever get to an election, I mean, how can you ensure the people that we're going to have a proper outcome of that election? And then you've got the mail-in ballots. You have the ballot harvesting in some states. You've got drop-off boxes. You have lack of photo identification, signature verifications. And in addition to these issues that you mentioned, there are multiple gaping holes, most of which all came about through COVID. And I will say this, these are laws, in essence, that unilaterally were made, as we're talking about, through secretaries of states or whomever. But they bypassed, most of the time, the legislatures of those states. These are laws that never would have been accepted, never would have been voted on through the legislatures, but they were forced upon us. And now we are find ourselves in an eight ball. Fortunately, dozens of states now have, through their legislature, come back and reined a lot of this nonsense in. But unfortunately, there's still a number of states that have not. So, you know, I address all these issues in the book. But this is a sacred trust. Something we are a country based upon the consent of the governed, right? Not the consent of the governing, the consent of the governed. And the epicenter of that truth is at the ballot box. And if ever that process is compromised, and we are in major, major trouble in this country. And that is kind of the push that I take in this whole book of raising the awareness of this most essential sacred trust that we have that must be protected at all costs.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked with Garland Favrito a couple of times on the show recently, and we're well familiar with the work that VoterGA.org is doing. And there have been some wins, you know, it does appear that, you know, like you're saying, work is happening right now. Do you think we can roll this back as a country? Is it down to a grassroots level? Does everybody have to work this from the local level? Is there any sort of federal help that we can expect? Like, will the Freedom Caucus be heard? What do you think is the way out?
Yeah, I think all of the above is involved. It obviously is going to take grassroots. Many, many states have pushed forth legislation to correct many of the problems because the grassroots have not let this issue go away. And so that has taken place, and it needs to continue. Obviously, our legislatures, both on the state and federal level, have a role. But let's keep in mind that the Constitution is very clear that the time, place, and manner of elections are left to the states. It is not the role of the federal government to take over the election processes. Our founders did not want that, and with good reason. That being said, I think there is potentially a place for there to be some general boundaries set, and the Constitution does allow for this, for the federal government to place some boundaries, like making sure, why not have clean voter files? I mean, that's like, and Congress could say, states need to keep their voter files accurate as much as possible. And this is not rocket science to do. Goodness, Amazon, they know who you are and they know where you live. Why can't we, as a federal government? We've got the Postal Service and know where you used to live, where you live now. We have utility companies, school districts. There are a host of different ways to combine accuracy of our voter files, and we need to do that. But yeah, so there's a relatively small, but a potential place for federal government to engage this thing. There's a huge role, obviously, for the states, huge role for the grassroots movements. But we cannot sit at home and think that my vote is not going to count. Therefore, I'm not going to vote at all. That is absolutely the worst thing that can be done right now. We need boots on the ground, eyes on the ground. We need poll workers, poll watchers, voters. We need to overwhelm the system so that if there are any attempts of shenanigans, we just overwhelm it with positive votes out there and with people watching and blowing the whistle if they see something that should not be taking place.
You're absolutely right. And it's not that we lack the technology. I mean, you mentioned Amazon. If you push in the first few numbers of your credit card, it instantly will pop up Visa, MasterCard, American Express, just based on those couple numbers. So it's literally instantaneous, real-time information. Of course, everybody that's been stopped by a police officer knows that within seconds, if you're in Massachusetts, they'll know if you've got an outstanding warrant for you in California. The technology certainly exists, Congressman. It seems that it comes down to a lack of will.
It does. At the end of the day, this is something that can be done. The reason it's not being done is because there's not the political will to do so. People are afraid that they're going to be accused of disenfranchising some voter or some such kind. Nothing can be further from the truth. Listen, there, and right now we have problems with people coming across the southern border. I'm sure it's been reported. I'm sure you're aware that many of these people coming across the border are being told how to vote. Well, it's illegal for them to vote, but nonetheless, someone evidently is telling them how to do so. We have many states that ask the question, are you a citizen? But then they prohibit anyone from investigating to find out whether or not these people are citizens. So for us to think that somehow we're serious about election integrity when we're really just kind of playing games many times is just offensive. There is, look, we have lots of problems in this country, right? I mean, more than we can shake a stick out right now, from the southern border to the protesting taking place, to crime, to inflation, to global decreased value in the eyes of our surrounding countries around the world. Our military is weak. But I don't know of anything any more important than securing the sacredness of the election. I may be, look, elections are not about who wins or who loses. Elections are all about whether or not the voice of the people was accurately heard and accurately recorded. That's what it's all about. I may be disappointed that my candidate loses, but if it was a fair election, I can come back 2 years from now and try to convince people to vote otherwise. But if there was a compromise in the election system, then what do I do? What do any of us do if that sacred trust is taken away from us? This is something, look, we can fix the economy, we can fix the border, we can do all those things, provided we are able to have a voice accurately heard at the ballot box. And so that's why this issue is one of the highest importance in poll after poll after poll with the American people, and rightfully so.
You're 100% right. It is a sacred trust. And the fact that, you know, we're seeing so many vulnerabilities in it is shockingly and understandably demoralizing for so many Americans, you know, and it's difficult for a lot of people. But I think you're right. And I'm curious also, what about the digital factor here? We've seen some pretty scary reporting about Dominion. A lot of things have come out about Dominion. They have employees, people in foreign countries where it's not even legal for them to do background checks on them, having remote access to vote tabulation machines and this kind of thing. I used to do cybersecurity, and I find this one of the most offensive parts of the whole thing, because I know what a government, cybersecurity stance should be on a computer, and we do not have those on our voting machines, it seems.
Yeah, and why not? I mean, look, if we are going to use machines, now I am at the point, I'm just at the point, like, let's just go to paper. I will take a hanging chad any day over some of the allegations that we have with the ability for these computers to be messed up in one way or the other. But if we are going to use these voting machines, they must be transparent, and there must be a way of not just recounting the vote. If the tabulation is wrong, it's wrong. It doesn't matter how many times you redo it. There must be authentic ways to verify the accuracy of the vote. Many states, for example, Georgia, my home state, the machine prints out a sample of what I voted for, and then the machine tabulates it. Well, at the end of the day, it seems to me those numbers ought to be compared. We ought to see exactly what the paper ballot said everyone voted for the numbers should be identical with what the machine says people were voted for. That kind of transparency just makes sense to me. And I think the more the people demand transparency, be it in the technological side or the procedural side of our elections, the more we're going to be able to protect them.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Very well said. The book is called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People. We encourage you to pick up a copy. Get some extras as gifts. Former Congressman Jody Heiss, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll look forward to having you back on again for an update. This is going to be an interesting election season, so we'd love to get your take as things develop. And we'd love you to stay tuned for the Jason Burmis Show coming up next here on Today's News Talk. For Timothy, myself, all our wonderful guests, and TNT, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.